each other that they may solve their common problems and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contribution. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. We got some announcements here. Raffle tickets are for sale by the registration table. The prizes are out there. They're really nice prizes. Tapes of all the meetings are available at the tape table. And the marathon meetings are in the room just across the hall, I believe, still. And the banquet tickets are at the registration table. Also, the spiritual meeting that was scheduled for 10 o'clock Sunday morning has been changed now to 9 a.m. Apparently, the speaker had to leave earlier than planned, and they would like everybody to hear from him, so it'll be at 9 o'clock now. There may be some of you who are not here who are not familiar with our tradition of personal anonymity at the public level. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, TV, and films. Thus, we respectively ask that no AA speaker, or indeed any AA member, be identified by full name or photograph in published or broadcast reports of our meeting. That doesn't particularly bother me, because most of the people in Ogden knew I was an alcoholic before I did. So they all know me by my name and some other names. The assurance of anonymity is essential in our effort to help other problem drinkers who may wish to share our recovery program with us. And our tradition of anonymity reminds us that AA principles come before personalities. And Jeanette will read how it works.
In the book. My name is Jeanette, and I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
Fifth chapter, How It Works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our story is disclosed in a general way, what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. Now one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked for his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. Number two, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Number three, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Number four, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Number five, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Number six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Number seven, we humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Number eight, we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Number nine, we made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Number 10, we continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, we promptly admitted it. Number 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Number 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order. I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought.
Thank you, Jeanette. Barbara will read the 12 traditions.
Hi, I'm Barbara, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Barbara.
The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, for each group, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Lots of P's. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those that they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relation policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you, Barbara. It reads the same standing up as it does sitting down, doesn't it?
Yeah.
She was afraid she couldn't do it standing up. Okay, our first speaker today will be Tom. And his topic will be, You Gave Me Hope to Carry On.
Hi, my name's Tom. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tom.
Talk to me. I'm very, very grateful to be here. Before I came to this program, I was one street over. And when I was on that one street over there, I looked at myself and I said I had no problems. That's why I lived on that one street over. Today I have a life that is a direct gift from a power that is greater than myself. I really believe that as we go along in this program, that more shall be revealed to us only when we are ready to have it revealed. On God's time. I've just had something revealed to me in the last couple of weeks that it's part of my growth. I am an alcoholic. And alcohol and drugs are only a symptom of my disease. of alcoholism. My disease is the bondage of myself, the ego, the low self-esteem, the confusion, the anger, the self-pity. My disease is me. I don't know what it's going to do for me, but all I know is it feels good to know what it is, because I've lived with it for a long time now, and I fought it. I fought people, places, and things, and life. And I've never gone anywhere with it. When I first came to this program, I was out of treatment. And I didn't know nothing. All I knew is that I didn't want the life that I had. I wasn't willing to go to any length to change my life because I was incapable of that. Tom's self-centered. Tom's selfish. When I came to the program, I wanted what you had. But I wanted it on my terms, in my way. And I was not willing to work for it. I spent a year in the program like that. The thing that kept me coming back to meetings was the smile that was in your heart. It wasn't in mine. The smile was on my face and it was plastic. I had to put it there because I was still dealing with ego that says you can't let these people see that you're still unhappy inside. You're supposed to be strong. You're supposed to be macho. It was crap. It separated me from the happiness that is rightly mine, that my higher power has in store for me. All I need to do is take the action to touch it, to get out of myself, to reach out to you, the ones that are reaching out to me, because that's all you've done is reach out to me. In my first year that I came into sobriety, you reached out to me on a daily basis and you carried me because I couldn't walk alone. I shared in the meetings and I shared a lot from my head. I shared a lot of the intelligence and a lot of philosophy and the theories and the practicality of living sober. I didn't share anything from my heart, only because there was nothing in my heart to share. There was something in my heart. That's God's gift to every living creature, is the hope that He places in their heart, the blessing of the Spirit. To me, it's the spirit of the fellowship that I share in this program. That's what kept me coming back, was the spirit of the fellowship. All my life, I've been looking for people to accept me the way I want them to. I've been looking to belong to anything. I've tried many different ways to belong. All of them wrong. When I came to this program, I didn't know if I wanted to belong to you or not. I didn't know if I wanted to be an alcoholic or not. I was only living in a God-given moment of peace, of easiness, that I wasn't in fear, that I wasn't on the edge of my seat, that I wasn't looking for more than what there was. I was comfortable when I sat with you in the meetings. I was comfortable when you shared my story with me, which was your story. I was comfortable with the identification. And I became comfortable over a period of time when I heard the action that you took, and I thought that might work for me. What do I gotta do to get out of myself to take the action? Something's wrong with me. I can't take the action. Why? I was unwilling. I was too selfish. I was too self-centered. I had the expectation that it should have been given to me. I didn't have to work for it. I've never worked for anything in my life that I felt good for. For me, my story is, simply, I'm not going to change anything until I hurt bad enough to change it. I'll sit around and make my life as miserable as I can until I realize that there is a way out. It's as simple as, I won't do nothing until I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. That's the way I am. I've had some fabulous opportunities to to listen to you share in this program. And that's what my program is. That's where it came from to me, was from you, as you gave it so freely, with love. I realized that in my sobriety, I had been staying sober on your programs all I could do. I hit a point where your sobriety wasn't good enough for me. It's not saying that your sobriety wasn't good. What I'm saying is I didn't feel it. And until I feel something, I cannot belong. And I was at a crucial point because I was still dealing with the ego. What do I have to do? And I am not willing to do it. And about that time, God chose to reveal to me the key to this program that was necessary for me. Action on the 12 steps of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I did the first five steps probably about eight times before my first year was up. They were totally ineffective because I wasn't really doing them with my heart. I was doing them with my head. I attended a conference that sparked me, that opened my heart. And I had my answer. That wasn't in my head, it was in my heart, and I knew what I had to do. I came home from the conference and I selected a sponsor and I started to work the steps. And I knew I was working the steps the right way because it hurt a lot. It hurt to go over to his house and tell me everything that was wrong with me in my life, to actually perceive me as I am, that I could accept. But yet my ego would tell me that he's wrong because I was trying to justify that I'm still okay. See, I'm afraid to look at myself. I'm afraid to look at the problem. It's far easier for me to say, you're the problem, I'm okay, than for me to take action on changing my life, my attitudes, my behavior, and my perceptions. The steps have allowed me to grow closer to the thing that is in my heart today that gets me higher than any chemical I have ever put in my system. That's a belief, a faith in the power that is greater than myself. The power that is in this room right now, that's carried in every one of our hearts. It's miraculous to me. I am a miracle and I see so many miracles out here. This is the only way that I want to live right now, today. There's nothing else that I want in my life. God is choosing to give me so much that, as an alcoholic, let me put it this way. I have lived in misery for so long. I have lived with pain and I have created my pain for so long that it is very comfortable for me to be uncomfortable. And now that I have comfort and that I have worked for comfort, I don't want it. I want the pain back. That's what's comfortable for me. But you see, that's change. That's one of the hardest parts of change for me. And for me, it's hard because I've been fighting this change for over a year now. I keep going back to creating problems in my own life when there is no problem to create. But you know, all I am is the spirit. My human form will die. This is my belief in my higher power, that I will go back to him. That's what I want. That is valuable to me. And through that, that leads me to feel that for me to go back to my higher power, what must I do while I am here? What I must do is find out what he wants me to do. Because in step three, I made a decision to turn my life and will over to the care of him. To me, that's a commitment. A commitment to specific goals, rules, standards, guidelines, whatever it is. The words that I used to hate most in my life. Any kind of control. Today, thy will be done instead of my will be done is the thing that I pray about 300 times a day. If not more, or if not less. That is the thing that turns my thinking off. Because that's how I get out of my heart, is when I get into my head. My heart is honest, is pure, is warm, is loving. My head wants to kill me. And the hardest thing to do is to stay out of the thing that wants to kill me, because it can yell real loud. It can tell me to make the mistakes, to go against what is right. I need the meditation to quietly reflect upon what is inside. The feeling of love, of giving, of caring, of sharing. Of taking the action of giving myself to you so I don't think about me. And it works for me. It works for me real well. Today, I can carry. It's like a flame, you know. When I work on it, when I get out of myself, it gets really hot and warm and nice and comfortable. But when I choose to get into the bondage of myself, then I feel pressure, stress, which brings on anger, pain, uncomfort. This program for me is growth. Growth along spiritual lines. Spiritual is in my heart. That's where God placed it. That's where he wants it. That's where I've got to go find it. For me, as an egotistical alcoholic with a very low self-esteem, my option is I've got to get out of that. I've got to give what I've got to you. They say you've got to give it away to keep it. That's true. That's how this program works, with the spirit of the fellowship. We keep giving to each other. We keep giving and giving and giving. We give to the newcomer, and we give to the old timer. My heart has been touched by so many of you. I first come with the question saying, what do you want from me? I have nothing to give you. And I fail to look at the simplicity of it. You don't want nothing from me. You just want to give from me for yourself. I could only understand that when I experienced it, when it was necessary for me not to be in pain. So I had to give to you. It was necessary. Today I'm not plagued with the symptoms of my disease, such as the mental obsession or the physical compulsion for alcohol. I'm still plagued with me. I'm still plagued with the thing that will take me back to where I came from. I'm still plagued with the thing that will take me back to looking at my options if I allow myself to look at my disease. If I allow myself to look at my recovery, to look at my heart, to look at trudging the road of happy destiny with you, of caring, of sharing, of giving, then I'm looking at a life that is fun. And this may not make sense to most people around here, but from where I've come from in my life, today, the pain that I go through in sobriety is fun, because I know when I walk through it, all the way through it, I know I've got something. And today I know I've got the hope that my higher power will give me the strength, if I ask for it, to walk through anything. I have the hope that He will never give me too much that I can't handle. That gives me a feeling that I know He won't give me too much, and that whatever He does give me, I can handle it. And when it's dealing with another alcoholic, I must handle it. Because there's so many people that must have handled it when they dealt with me, the obstinate one. Today I can easily say I love all of you. I love all of you from my heart because you carry the gift that God gave me in you. And I love that gift, the Spirit. The Spirit. To me, that's where life is. That's the energy that I live off of, is the Spirit. I don't know where my future's going, and I don't care. I only know that I'm right here, right now. And if I live right now, right here, then this right now and right here is the very, very best it can be. Because I'm looking at it. I'm feeling it. That's all I've got. I don't have no more. I don't have yesterday. And I don't have tomorrow. I've only got right now. And if I blow right now, then I'm going to blow everything else I've got. I love you all. And I thank you for the gift that you have given me. And I really want to give it away. Because that's what you told me how it works. And I believe you. I've got hope in you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom. Our next reader will be Billy, and his topic will be Alone in the Dark, But Now You've Come. Hi, I'm Billy, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Billy.
Alone in the Park, huh? Thank you, Marion. I will remember this. I've been alone at my own choosing most of my days. From as far back as I can remember, I chose to be that way. It was easier for me than to deal with people, situations, or whatever. And when I started drinking, which was at 13, I had seen what alcohol could do to people and families. And I told myself at an early age, you know, I won't do that. I promised myself I wouldn't. But for some reason, when I first got drunk, I liked it. I liked what it did. It made me be able to talk. It made me be able to do exactly about what I wanted to, I thought. And as time progressed, I found myself not doing it for that reason, doing it because I needed it. And at the age of 15, when I was drinking a bottle of wine a day and a little bottle of shaving lotion mixed with it so the teachers couldn't smell it, it wasn't that I was falling down in the hallways. I didn't want them to smell the wine. And it just got worse and worse. And then I got destructive, not towards anybody I thought. I was probably really hurting my family more than I thought.
well, that I realized I was doing. There would be days I'd wake up and I'd have a pillow sheet wrapped around one arm where I had taken a razor blade to myself. And at 16, I had no reason to even think about wanting to die. And it just kept getting worse. And both my parents were in AA, and I had stumbled into many AA meetings drunk. It seemed easy for me to do that because the minute I walked in the door, they knew that I wanted money and I didn't have to hassle. I was given the money and ushered out. And I knew there was something wrong, but I didn't care. It didn't bother me. And then I got in some trouble that I really couldn't get out of. And they put me in a rehab up here on 25th Street. And you people told me that I wasn't an alcoholic because I wasn't old enough. And that made me feel good. So then I went back out on the street and I proceeded to become an alcoholic. I turned 18 years old on the Skid Row in San Francisco. And that was my big thing, see. Once I hit Skid Row, then I knew I better start doing something about it. And all this time I ran alone. I didn't need anybody. And the only time I'd ever talk to God is when I was in a jam, which was most of the time. And then I hit Ogden once again, and I turned 21 over here on this street. And got in trouble again. And so they put me back up here in this rehab. And then that's when it struck me, you know, I had a gentleman tell me, you know, you must be an alcoholic, a younger gentleman. Most of the old timers, I would hear from them, you know, hey, I drank 30, 40, 50 years, you know. And I'd only been out on the streets, in my mind, 3 or 4. So I was looking forward to, you know, a nice time with alcohol way down the line. And he told me that I was an alcoholic. And I stood up and said, hi, I'm Billy and I'm an alcoholic. That opened the door, both doors, just wide for me. Because once I admitted I was an alcoholic, that said, hey, you can do exactly what you want now with alcohol, you know. You can drink it, you can get in trouble, you can hurt, and run rampant. And so I did. I never worked. My brother-in-law used to tell me that I'm the only person he knew that took a 17-year vacation. And there was times that I look back now, and I wasn't just drunk for months. I went on a rampage once that lasted 2 years. And I know to this day that I would not quit. There's nothing you people could say, do, for me to witness what I wasn't going to quit, and God knew that. And at the age of 30, and it's always seemed like on my birthday, I had to do something really outrageous. I don't know why. Maybe I was celebrating I was still alive one more year. But at the age of 30, I finally fell over dead. But before I did, it wasn't a talk, it was a demand from the man upstairs that you will show me what I am supposed to do. Because once again, I was getting ready to boogie. And I didn't like the rehab. They had got me well. I had got to where I could eat one meal a day. And I was ready to run again. And that's when he says, okay, this is what I'm going to do for you. And I found myself in a hospital. And the doctor was telling me that I had an alcohol seizure. Okay, I knew enough and heard enough from other people who had seizures. The man that was the director of the rehab had had seizures. And he guaranteed me that I would die if I kept going. And all those years that I ran rampant, death did not, that was just part of the game. But when it was there, and it was there, I had to make a decision. And like I said last night, the decision part of it was based on, I didn't feel it was, I owed my mother this, to have her walk into my flop house and me be dead with a bottle of wine. That's the only thing that I could think of at the time which was wrong, granted. And the other one was, I don't really want to die. I have no intentions of dying. So then what do? You quit drinking. And my track record is not very good at all. So everybody that knew me, I'm sure there were wagers put down. This is just another con from Billy. But what they didn't know, Billy was scared shitless. This was it. I was looking at it. There's no getting out of this one. You have two choices, continue or die. So I quit drinking. Now, that was just it, you know. Hey, no problem. I don't want to die. I don't need you people. I'm looking at death. You know, I'm not looking just to stay sober one day at a time. I'm not going to drink the rest of my life. So when I got out, I didn't. And I went for a solid year of trying to convince everybody I knew that I didn't need meetings. I didn't need to listen to your bullshit, your stories, none of that. But all this time, I was alone. Sitting in a house, going to work, going home. When my mother would come down to see if I was still alive, I would go in the bedroom. She would dung my house out, leave groceries, and leave. And all this year, I'm going, see what you've done, God? You have actually put me in a position that I'm alone. And I don't want to be now, you know. I quit drinking. So why is it I am so screwed up inside, threatening suicide every time I open my mouth? Not to other people, to myself and to him. And I take it for granted he didn't, he got tired. Because Billy wouldn't do nothing for Billy. Billy wanted it handed to him. He wanted God to walk through the door, say, okay, here it is. You poor little bastard. And he wouldn't do that. So the threats got deeper, the pills got a little closer to my hand, and I started on drugs. I never did give marijuana up. That's the Indian way. Hey, that's just as good as tobacco, you know? And I am a very good con. I could go to any doctor, and I can shake like nobody can shake, rub my head, and have a fit just to give me some kind of downers. And this one doctor gave me some that scared me. I eat two of them, and I'd wake up 2 days later. I go, well, those aren't for me. Those are too heavy. But yet I'm going to kill myself. You know, let us get a little smaller dose of something, you know. And it never did work. So finally I thought, on my year of my sobriety, not your people, mine, I hadn't had a drink of booze in a year. You owe yourself a present. So I went out and I bought me a brand new Harley in the middle of winter. put it in my front room, and stared at it. Would sit on it, drop a few hits of LSD, crank it up, and sit there in the fumes, gonna kill myself. Now, I'm not alone, see, I have my bike. So I'm not alone anymore, but I'm still gonna kill myself because the sun won't shine so I can ride. You know. It never dawned on me to go to a meeting. Well, that's not true. I didn't need them. You know, here I am. I fell over dead from alcohol. I don't need meetings. What I need is some sunlight to blow some of this energy off before I kill myself. So the sun shined. I took my bike down for an inspection, and on the way home, I got run over. I got wiped out. My bike got wiped out. And I got to go upstairs and be yelled at. And that's that's exactly what happened. In my mind, I heard, "You sniveling son of a bitch. If you want to die, here it is. If you don't, what you will do is you will get back down there and you will get on with life and you will take it for what it is. Now, what will it be?" I said, "No, I don't want to die." The next thing I remember, I woke up, I was totally healed, all but my left leg. They were going to cut it off, which didn't bother me. I was alive. I didn't give a shit. But I was not going to drink. Now, drugs, it doesn't say anything in here about drugs. Drugs was not my problem, you know. So you're eating 25 hits of LSD a weekend. That's not your problem, man. Don't drink. So for 6 years, I white-knuckled it by myself once again. At no time did I go, "Poor Billy." You see, Billy got slapped once hard already for "Poor Billy" suicide bullshit. No more was he going to say, "I'm going to kill myself," because I knew the man upstairs wasn't going to play no more games with Billy. So I just went on, I white-knuckled it, I bullshitted my way around for 6 years. Ran from here to California, from here to California. Doing just as many drugs as possible. But never once did I get in trouble. See, and alcohol always got me in trouble. Never once did it give me a break. And then, again, I made a pact with God. I'm always making pacts with God, and I never win. So that tells me right there that, you know, hey, it's time for you to basically get honest with Billy. 2 years ago, I walked down in the Alano Club. I don't know why, how, what happened. I have learned I don't question anymore. But I found myself going, hey, this is where I'm supposed to be. Am I getting honest with Billy? Hey, come on, you've never been honest before. What's your bag now? There must be something in it somewhere. So I threw all my drugs out. I started going to meetings. I started screaming honesty. For the first year, it was something new. And most of the people know me, where I'm at. And I've always talked the talk, you know. Hey, I can tell you some, don't drink, don't drug, that's it. Go to meetings, you know. Read the book. I find myself now in a position, I want to run. I want to say, that's it. You did what you could. Another part of me is going, hey, I can see some kind of growing. And that scares hell out of me because in my mind, I am not supposed to grow. I'm supposed to be able to do this me, not you, me, you know? I stand up here, I've done a lot of things I'm not real happy about. Okay. And I've screened, probably most of you know, for 2 years now, step one. I'll stay on step one till I die. Well, that's bullshit. I am finding myself wanting to get into your people's program. I want to belong to AA. I don't want to sit out on the outskirts anymore and be a dribbling idiot, which that's what I call myself. I hate the thoughts of me having to, you people call it pride, I call it stupidity. But it's time that I swallowed some and did something. Now, I'm not going to jump right out there and tell you that I'm going to whiz through this blue book, which I probably own four or five, and I've never opened. I'm not going to tell you that I'm doing this and I'm doing that. What I am doing right now is I'm letting the man upstairs do for a change. And apparently, he's doing. This morning, my wife complimented me for not ripping the waitress's face off because she brought me raw eggs. She says, see, that's growth. I don't like the word growth because that means I am changing. And I don't have no choice. Who am I trying to bullshit, you know? I don't have no choice in the matter of change. I have a choice that I can go back over there on that street if I want. But this is what I want. I want what you people have, you see. And I know the only way to get it is to get off my ass. You know, I'm not kidding anybody. That bothers me. Once again, I want to be alone. Part of me. And that part is really getting smaller. That's another scary thing, you know. I don't necessarily want to jump right into it. You know, you get my drift. But I don't want to wait any longer, you know. I'm finding myself doing strange things like Wednesday. I had this man here. Bless me. And I don't even know why. You know, I'm sitting there playing pool. He comes around the corner. I says, what are you doing tonight? He said, I don't know why. I said, well, I'd like you to bless me. He goes, sure. I shoot a few more games. I'm going, man. What, you know. So I go ask my mom. I say, hey, have I ever been blessed, baptized? You know, I don't know. She says, no. And I says, oh, well, I'm going to get blessed tonight. She says, what do you mean? I says, well, I'm not sure. You know, I have no idea, but if you'd like to be there, it's going to be up to camp. Okay. So I'm hoping he wouldn't show up because I didn't know what he was going to do, you know. But it was real simple, and I feel real good about it, you know. So that shows me I'm reaching out for something. I don't know what it is. And I know one thing. I'll find it. I damn sure, if, see, that's a little word, if, I will let you people show me, you know. It's not Billy's going to do it. You know, I think Billy's getting tired of Billy. It's like some guy asked me the other day, you know, about the easy and the hard way. I go, I don't know. I always go the hard way. You know? And I go that way and I go that way until I go, well, try the other way. And that's the way I've been, you know. And my back's getting awful sore from falling down. So, to me, it's time. You know, I have no idea what's going to happen. I'm not even going to... I'd be a liar if I sat here and told you I'm not going to worry about it, you know. Because I know for damn sure I don't want to be wearing one of these, you know. Don't get me wrong, that's probably good for him, but for me it wouldn't look good. You know, that was my big thing. I'll quit drinking, drugging, and if I quit smoking, just what the hell will I do? You know, I have to do something. You know, I mean, that's just my nature. If it's not wrong, it's not right. Well, like I said, the only thing I'm going to do is I'm going to kick back and I'm going to let God and you people show me the way. And then it's up to me, me alone, to do something about it. You know, if I want to sit on my ass for another 10 years, I'm going to be miserable. I ain't going to hurt you people, you know, but it's surely going to hurt Billy. And I want to thank you, Marion, for letting me stand up here and shake. I really love it. Thank you.
Thank you, Billy. Our next speaker will be Ken, and his topic will be You Light Up My Days and Fill My Nights.
For me, huh? Hi, I'm Ken, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to change the topic here. I like the way it was written in and scratched out. It says, I love you. I love you too, Marion. It says, I love you, and my God, you light up my days and you fill my nights. And that's a better topic for me. So I don't know why you scratched out the first part. You know, it's been a lot of fun in sobriety. And there's been a lot of hard times of sobriety, and that's what makes it all work. The being able to be up here today and speak is a real joy, because I remember a time that I spoke and to a group of people like this. It wasn't an AA meeting; it was in business meetings, and you know, just a big game. There was no feeling of love or compassion for one another. We didn't share anything in common except trying to outdo the other one financially. Well, through drinking, I lost that. And when I lost that, I came back up on the rebound and ended up like this, as Billy put it. It's handy like this, so you don't have to worry about what you're going to wear, you know. It's no color coordinating at all. You just get up and do it. But anyway, the thing, I guess, that hits hardest home in sobriety, at least for me, was dealing with the depression part of it. You know, we have the joy of finding sobriety, and that's really an eye-opener, that we can actually be sober human beings. Finding out we're alcoholics is a shock to our system. If I was not an alcoholic, I would not be here today. I would not be in the position I am today. And I would have no relationship with my God, probably, because I didn't need it. It took something as powerful as alcohol and being an alcoholic to put me down on my knees. That I thank God for. He, in his ultimate wisdom, knew that all of us have such strong characters and strong wills that probably it would take, nothing else would have worked, that we could be in a position to show love, to be compassionate, and to be able to turn to him. A lot of funny things happen in sobriety. You know, I came down here last night thinking I was supposed to be here at 1 o'clock, which was kind of a treat, and I got up. I was sitting in an easy chair, and I fell asleep, and I woke up, and I thought, oh, 1 o'clock, and I got in the car, and I buzzed down here, not thinking that at 1 o'clock in the morning you don't drive fast, no matter what you're doing, especially on a Friday night. And where they came from is beyond me. You know? And, one on each side, and, you know, your heart goes pitter-patter a little bit, and you think, oh, you know, now I'm really going to be late for this meeting. just waved at them. They nodded and drove away. So that worked out pretty good. But driving for me was a real fear in sobriety. Driving with a drink in me was no problem. In sobriety, I became aware that there was other cars and other people and sidewalks. And, you know, I could get in the car and have a couple drinks in me and get from point A to point B and not even know how I got there, nor could I care less. I didn't have to worry about those kind of things. So it is a change in your lifestyle. You know, everything has changed. Every single thing we do has changed. Fortunately, whoever said all I had to do was deal with 24 hours was really in my ballpark. You know, because if I have to deal with more than 24 hours, I'm in big trouble. I break it down. When I started this program, I broke it down into minutes. I kept track of my hours for a long time because it was really impressive. You know, you add up 24 hours a time, multiplying times 7 days a week, and then by 30 days, you got like 2,000 hours, you know, and that's, wow, that's something, and it's only 30 days, really. But we do what we have to do to get through it, and that's the beauty of the program, is the simplicity of it. We're in a beautiful building, we're all sober, most of us are having a good time, and that's all that counts. That's all that counts. We've decided to take an hour of our day out today and share, to be together, and to offer support, even just in numbers. To have all of you wonderful alcoholics and families alcoholics sitting there still for an hour and not saying anything is amazing. You know how hard it is? I know how hard it is. I sat through some of those speaker meetings, and boy, you're looking at your watch, and you think, this guy's got to pipe down pretty quick, you know? But that's okay. Those are all things that we deal with on a day-to-day basis, an hour-to-hour basis. There, in this depression that I have had to deal with, because it's a reality, and everything's going smooth. There's no highs. There's no low. I'm sober. I'm doing just, God's got me right where he wants me. I'm thrilled with it. Things are happening. So I choose to have some kind of an emotion. I have a love of my Lord, my church, but I don't have the one-on-one love. They kind of frown on those things, you know. So, but that's okay. I have a lot of love for my fellow man and the people around me. And that's a very, very special love that I hold dear. But you don't have any tangible thing. So what we tend to do, or I tend to do, is to conjure up things from the past, not realizing that I asked for forgiveness for that once, and God in his wisdom forgave me for that and said, you're still going to be an alcoholic. Okay, I'll forgive you for all that, but you're still going to be an alcoholic. It's going to help you stay in line, you know, and that's okay. That's his plan. I'm an alcoholic till the day I die. This book, I believe, was inspired, and I'll believe that till the day I die. And all those things help me so that I don't have to be depressed about yesterday's. I don't have to let yesterday's be an anchor that I'm dragging around, an emotion that I have to deal with. All I do is just enjoy today for what it is. I've got a big problem where I am. People come to me with other problems and stuff, and we talk about it, and then they look at me and they say, well, Ken, you don't seem like you're taking this too serious. You know? Well, I'm taking it serious, but I'm not going to jump up and down or cry about it, okay? Let's get to the head of the problem and solve it. You know, where's the problem lay? What's the bottom line? How do you stand in your relationship? You know, higher power. Can you imagine that all of us showing up in heaven and saying, hi, higher power? He's going to say, yeah, hi, alcoholic. I mean, he's got his tag, you know. But that's okay, you know, whatever it takes, whatever it takes. But I don't take life real serious. If you take life serious, you're going to end up in a cesspool of life. For whatever reasons, we're alive today. Through His graces, we were able to sober up and to realize that there is a God, a loving God that cares about us right now today, that knows everything about us. It's the one guy you don't run a con job on. He knows. And that's okay with me. I like that feeling. I like the feeling of being amongst you people, some of the most successful people I've ever met in my entire life. Whether you're working or not working, for us to go through what we've gone through in our lifetime and to be able to face up to our problem and deal with our problem and turn it over to a higher power. This room has got, without a doubt, the biggest success story that mankind knows. And that's what makes us special. We dealt with the hardest blow I think mankind could have, is being an alcoholic, and it doesn't change. It stays that way to the day we die. Our life is an hour-to-hour, a day-to-day judgment of ourselves. We have the choice to do as we please, and we choose to be sober. We choose to enjoy life for what it is. You know, if he snatches us up tomorrow, that's okay. We're going to meet him sober. A man once told me a best way to keep me in line is whatever I'm doing, if he happened to recall me right at that moment, would I want to be caught doing what I'm doing? And yes, what I'm doing is what I'd like to be caught at doing. And if I don't feel comfortable about where I'm at or what I'm doing, then I make fast tracks and change what I'm doing. Because I'm the only one that's responsible for that. No one else is. That's about all I've got to share. I'd like to thank Roger, Mary, and both for putting this together and giving us a chance to share. Really enjoyed the panel. These guys, Tom and I, had the opportunity to speak. The last time we spoke was to a bunch of kids that were kind of fidgety and stuff. Didn't think we had any impact on them. We got some letters from them. It was kind of fun. So you never know. You know, don't be ashamed. I'm not ashamed to say I'm an alcoholic. You never know what that person across the table from you is going through or what he's trying to reach out and say. I'm not going to run around and tell everybody I'm proud I'm an alcoholic, but I'm not ashamed of it either. It's a good place to be in life. So thank you. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you, Ken. I'd like to express my appreciation for everybody who's been here and for the speakers, and I'd like to have us all give them another hand. And we'd like to close the meeting now with the Lord's Prayer, and I'm going to ask Ken if he'd lead us.
Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever. Amen.
He's coming back to work.
Thank you, Roland.
Appreciate what you had to say. Sure.